Hey, welcome to Your Turn. Mike Causa here. Delighted to have you with us. Going to be talking in the first part of the show with Greg Stanford and Katie Maddox from the Federal Managers Association. There's an awful lot to talk about now. And Greg and Katie, are you with us?
We're here.
Okay. I don't exactly know where to start, but maybe we should start with the shutdown, which as late as last week, it appeared that the government was going to be shut down October 1, which would be Thursday, tomorrow. What's it look like now?
Well, it's looking a little bit better, I think, with Speaker Boehner's resignation. It kind of, you know, threw everything in a loop. But it looks like because of his resignation, we're going to move forward with a clean CR bill that will fund the government until December 11th. But that's the new focus date. With December 11th, we're going to see even more things added to budget planning than we are currently seeing right now. We're going to have a highway bill coming up then. We're going to have to talk about the debt ceiling again, and there are also some tax provisions that are going to expire at that time. So there's going to be even more added to the pot during the holiday season. And I think also the holiday season is also going to throw, you know, some stuff into the mix as well. You know, if Congress decides to shut down the government on December 11th, and they go into recess for the holiday season, we might not see them discuss reopening it until the new year.
And for those who say that couldn't happen, we go back to, what is it, 88, 89, the Clinton-Gingrich battle, which extended over a two-month period, right?
Mm-hmm. So I think, you know, right, if it does, if we do get a clean CR that passes today, you know, we've just dodged a bullet. We haven't solved anything.
Well, you know, one thing, Greg, feel free to jump in on this, but I like the rest of us, I read everything I could about the shutdown and all the speculation and all the experts, and each publication and network had its own person who was telling us what, and it got down to percentages, and one leading budget expert said as of last week there was a 75% chance the government would shut down. Another expert put it at 95, but they were all looking at different things, the Liberty Caucus and the Planned Parenthood and this sort of thing. Nobody anticipated that the Speaker of the House would say, you know what, I quit.
Yeah.
Absolutely. You know, and that, you know, that that sure took everybody for a loop. And so I think Katie's right in terms of what we're hearing, what's going to happen today, that, you know, we're anticipating and expecting a clean CR to go through. What I'm interested in is, you know, I was reading earlier this week that Senate Majority Leader McConnell has been in discussions and is kicking off discussions with current Speaker Boehner and the President, and talking about working on getting top line numbers for both fiscal 16 and 17, because you know, as you know, we're going into an election year, and I know when Majority Leader McConnell took over the leadership of the Senate last November, that he had pledged that there would be no government shutdown. And so I'm really curious to see what comes from that. Of, do we get some kind of a broad agreement on top line numbers that's going to, for FY 16 and 17, that's going to not necessarily please everyone, but at least placate everyone or make everyone equally upset. But at least that would give our, you know, the managers at FMA, at least having those top line numbers and having some certainty for FY 16 and 17, an opportunity to manage and plan for what's to come in those next 2 years.
Yeah, it could be that there's probably very few members of this House or Senate who remember the relatively good old days when Ronald Reagan and Tip O'Neill would fight during the day and drink and tell jokes during the night, that bipartisanship, which seems to have disappeared. And it would be interesting if something as singular as the resignation of the Speaker of the House, John Boehner, if that could sort of jolt people back to normality.
Absolutely, because, you know, I remember those days, and, you know, when normal order and, you know, like you said, there was civility, that there were certainly people had their differing ideologies, but were able to to put them aside in order to govern for what was best for the country. So
yeah, compromise was not a dirty word.
Yeah.
Okay. Hey, well, next on the agenda, the pay raise. Where is it? What is it? What are the odds?
Well, it looks good. You know, everything seems to be on track for right now. It's a minimum raise. It's 1.3%. For some people, but a 1% raise for the majority of federal employees. The extra 0.3 comes from an increase in locality pay, but hopefully, we're looking good, and federal employees should expect to see a tiny, tiny bump.
Okay, and that'll help coming up with the next topic, which is the Federal Employee Health Benefits Program. It's the biggest employer-sponsored program in the country. The government pays 70 to 76% of the total premium, depending on the plan you're in and whether you're a postal or a non-postal worker. It is considered the best company-sponsored health plan in the nation. Obamacare was more or less built around it, founded on it, and to show its good faith, Congress actually got out of the Federal Employee Health Benefits Program. They went into the local and state exchanges, which may work against federal workers somewhere down the line, but for now we have these new premiums. OPM says, I believe they're saying the average premium is going up 6.4%, and I think government executive reported 7.4%.
Mm-hmm.
But the bottom line is, everybody looks at this a different way, but it is an average. The Potomac River on average is probably 9 feet deep, but that doesn't help you very much when you're trying to wade across it. So what do you make of these new premiums?
Well, Mike, I went to the briefing when OPM released the 2016 plan year premium rates, and so to clear up that 6.4 and the 7.4,
yeah.
the overall average FEHB premium increase is going to be 6.4% for 2016. The average last year was 3.2, so it's exactly double last year's increase. That 7.4% number is the average enrollee share increase.
Yeah.
And so that's where the differences are.
So that's a more realistic number then, isn't it? Really, I mean, that's for people.
That exactly of what people are going to look at. What's the impact on them? Absolutely. So, you know, we've already heard from several of our members of the concern of just health premiums and FEHB continuing to rise. OPM noted that it's the fifth straight year under 7% for the overall FEHB premium increase, and said that it continues the trend of moderate increases. But we have heard from many of our members that have voiced concerns of, you know, hey, my share is going to increase by 7.4%. The best that I'm looking at for a pay increase is 1.3%, and that continues that trend of minimal or no pay increases. And so our members are frustrated, and rightfully so.
This morning on Federal News Radio, I was listening to Executive Editor Jason Miller, and he interviewed a top OPM official in the health benefits area, and they said something very interesting. They said that one reason that the increase is as much as it is because of higher prescription drug costs. And I believe he said that in the private sector health plans, the total the amount of the cost for the private sector plans was about 10% was made up in prescription drugs, whereas in the federal program it was 20%.
It's actually OPM says it's 26%.
26,
so,
okay.
Yeah, so even higher, yeah.
Well, do you have any idea? I mean, you would think it's the biggest health plan in the country. You would think they would be able to negotiate better prices, unless I'm missing something.
Well, I know that that's their plan, and they continue to work on ways to try to bring that number down. I know that there have been discussions about is there a way to do something along the lines of TRICARE and that sort of a thing. But I know that is a an issue that's near and dear to OPM, trying to bring that number down, which would bring down the overall number. And it's something that we're actually going to be discussing today. There's going to be an FEHB advisory group meeting at OPM, and FMA is a member of that body. And so I'm going to be heading over to OPM today, and I think that's going to be one of the topics that's addressed.
Okay, take a short break here. We'll be right back on federalnewsradio.com, 1500 AM. Welcome back to Your Turn. Mike Causey here. I'm talking with Greg Stanford and Katie, I started to say Katie Holmes, Katie Maddox. She's going to be on the second half of the show. Katie Maddox from the Federal Managers Association. And we were talking about the federal health benefits program. The premiums are going up, depending on who you listen to, 6.4% or 7.4%. But that's an average. There are probably some good deals in there if you check out the tables, and you can go to the federalnewsradio.com. In fact, go to my column, the Federal Report, and there is a link to the pay tables or the premium tables in there, and that'll help you do some shopping. We're talking about the fact that the prescription costs in the federal program represent 26% of the total costs, as opposed to about 10% in the private sector. And you say you're going to a meeting with OPM to discuss this?
That's right. The OPM, in the last several years, convened the FEHB advisory group, and there are a number of organizations. FMA is one of the members of that that group, and other employee groups that are out there participate, and it's an opportunity for us to go and hear directly from OPM, to hear about what's going on. We generally meet in the spring and get a sense of what the call letter is going to look like, and then again in the fall, and the fall meeting is today, and basically to get a heads up on what to expect and some of the things that they're working on, and it also gives us a forum to weigh in directly and share what FMA members' concerns might be on all things related to FEHB.
Okay, I've got to ask you something about the ultimate selfie for federal workers and retirees now. Finally, after many, many years of campaigning, the folks who wanted a self plus one health plan option were going to have it. Mm-hmm. When the open season begins, you can choose self only, you can choose self plus family, or you can choose self plus one. And this would be for couples as opposed to a family of 3, 4, 5, or 10 people. How's it? Did that disappoint? Did the premiums disappoint?
No, I think that, first of all, you know, self plus one is something that FMA supported. It was an FMA issue brief for several years, so we were excited when it passed several years ago, and we're excited to see it actually implemented. What OPM told us yesterday was that about 95% of self plus one enrollees will pay lower premiums, and I think you would expect that of since you're not covering as many people as self and family, and that was the whole point of the of getting that in there and bringing FEHB more in line with other entities that offered the self plus one. But again, so what OPM told us was that 95% approximately of self plus one enrollees will pay lower premiums, but then there's that 5% that would actually pay more for the same plan than they would in self plus family. So we're encouraging all of our members to take a close look, make sure that your plan would be part of that 95% that pays the lower premiums, and if not, we and actually OPM encouraged as well, would encourage those folks, that 5% of people who would be inclined to do self plus one, to stay in self plus family, because for those 5%, it'll actually be cheaper. And that's just a quirk in the contribution share formula.
Well, you know, the open season begins in November. What are the dates again?
It opens November 9th, and it's open through December 14th.
Okay. So that's a long time, and the government goes out of its way to help people make choices without making the choice for them. Many of them subscribe to this Washington Consumer Checkbook online guide, which is excellent. You can even do it at work on the job and find out the best plan for you and the best deal. We spend lots of time on it here at Federal News Radio, both with radio shows and on our homepage. Other publications in this field do the same thing, spend a lot of time on it, and yet year after year, the number of people who actually change plans is something like 6 out of every 100 eligibles. You almost wonder why bother.
Yeah, and that actually brings up a good point that with the new Self Plus One option, which this year the 2016 plan year is going to be the first year that that it's offered. We definitely want to have a big information campaign because it's not an automatic rollover. You have to voluntarily elect to change, into Self Plus One. It's not. Mm-hmm. And that's something that I know OPM is going to have a major communications campaign on that. But we want to make sure that we let all of our members know and let everyone out there with FEHB that you have to actively enroll in Self Plus One, that it won't be an automatic thing. And that's also something that OPM stressed yesterday.
Well, a lot of people have anticipated this Self Plus One for years, and over the years I've talked to a number of health insurance experts about it, and they say the first year it's going to be good, but in years 2, 3, 4, depending on the selection process, that it could actually wind up being more expensive than a family plan. And their rationale is this: if a lot of young, healthy couples get into it, they don't have children, it's just a couple, their medical costs are going to be lower. If a lot of older people whose kids have left the nest and now they're in their 60s, 70s, and 80s, and if they switch to the Self Plus One, that could drive premiums up in future years. Have you had any discussions about that?
I know that's always been a concern, and we've heard pushback on that issue. But I think we just actually have to, when it's offered during the open season, we have to examine who is, applying for the Self Plus One. What does their, family dynamics look like? Is it young couples? Is it a single parent and their child? Is it, more elderly couples? So I think once we see those statistics, then we can fully examine what the payout is going to be.
This morning on his show, Francis Rose had a good discussion with Nina Olson, who's the taxpayer advocate and sort of watchdog for the IRS. And she had some very interesting comments and numbers about the problems IRS is having as Congress, for whatever reason, whether it's ideological or just anger, been cutting back on their staff, and the wait times are getting longer and longer for people who need assistance, and then people who can't get assistance are getting letters from the IRS saying we're going to seize your bank account or garnish your wages or whatever. What are you hearing from your people in the IRS?
I think we really saw we got a lot of feedback and a lot of concern, especially during the tax season last year. I think everyone, was aware of long wait times on the phone. They weren't getting their questions answered, and it was directly related to poor funding levels. The IRS is, I think I believe the statistics are, for every dollar that is given to the IRS, they give the government back 10, largest
yeah.
source of revenue. And when you cut their funding drastically, you're also going to impact how much revenue you're going to get. And it's astonishing that members of Congress think that the IRS will offer the same level of customer service when their funding levels are so low.
Yeah. Well, and this happens every so often. Congress will have a change of heart and they'll say, look at all this revenue that's not collected. Why don't we contract out to the private sector? Let these debt collectors get it and we'll give them 25% of the loot. And then you have an upheaval with the taxpayers themselves, people who get roughed up by some of these private debt collectors.
And I also think if you do outsource it to the private sector, then you're not going to be able, you know, to get the transparency that you have in the IRS. And I think we also need to examine that, too.
Well, the other concern is the IRS tells you where the person is who owes the money. They give them all the vital statistics about them. And then you have privacy issues, among other things. And I noticed you and a number of other organizations provide a sort of a reading list for your members every week. And you say this is some of the best in the federal employee-related press. One of the stories you cited this week for people to read is from Federal News Radio. And it's about the OPM data breach. Can you go through that real quickly?
So the latest news on the data breach is that, unfortunately, it looks like there has been a greater compromise of fingerprint data. So originally they thought it was 1 million people were impacted by fingerprint data. So what that means is that fingerprint information was stolen, and instead of the originally estimated 1 million people, is now, I believe, 5.5 million. And so we need to be on the lookout as that for well.
And it's not necessarily over, is it?
It is not. So I think we're just going to keep seeing more and more data come out about what exactly was impacted and how many people are affected.
Excuse me, Katie, we got to interrupt you here because we need to talk with Tammy Flanagan coming up. But thank you so much for doing this. Thank you, Greg. Thank you, Katie. We'll have you on again, and we'll see you guys soon. Meanwhile, stay tuned for Tammy Flanagan, benefits expert.
Thanks, Mike.
Thanks, Mike.
Hey, welcome back to Your Turn. This is Mike Causey. Thanks to Greg and Katie for talking to us about a variety of issues. Now we're going to go to talk with Tammy Flanagan. She is a benefits expert par excellence. And we talked to her earlier about changes in FEGLI and long-term care.
And the good news with long-term care is that if you already have a plan, if you have the federal long-term care insurance program, your premiums are not going to change. They're not going up or down. They're just doing what they did last week. However, if you have yet to purchase a federal long-term care insurance, you want to take a look at the calculator on ltcfeds.com, and you'll find that those premiums will be the current premiums. They've already updated the calculator, so you can see what it's going to run you. Now, as I was talking with some of the other people that I deal with that talk about benefits and so forth, and we were talking about these price increases that in some cases was more than a 35% increase, depending on which age group and which plan, some as little as a 10% increase, but it varied. And so we were talking about this, and some people were saying, oh my gosh, that's terrible. You know, I'm going to go buy my insurance elsewhere. So I thought I'm going to do a little bit of research and just find out if I did buy my insurance elsewhere, is it really going to be any cheaper than this? And the base rate privately is actually more than these increased rates.
So that doesn't surprise me.
This is still a very competitive plan if you're looking around. And I think that even federal long-term care partners would tell you to shop around. You want to do your homework. You want to do your research and understand the differences in the policies. You want to see what kind of a benefit you have if you want to stay at home. You know, can you hire your family member to provide care for you and have them be paid? If you move to an assisted living or nursing home care, do you know what it costs to live there today? So you might know how much insurance coverage you might want to purchase to help you pay those expenses. So it does help to do some research. And certainly if you go to ltcfeds.com, you can not only find the calculator, but you can find a lot of just general information about how to shop for a long-term care policy. What does it cover? What are some of the things that you want to compare when you shop around? They even have a checklist on there to stack up the benefits of this plan against the one you're shopping against. So, the premiums have gone up for new policies, not the old policies, and some of them have gone up quite significantly. But the reason for that has nothing to do with anybody making more money or making a profit. It has nothing to do with that. It has to do with the fact that this type of insurance is insurance that unfortunately many of us are going to actually get our money's worth out of.
Yeah.
You know, we always say that about insurance. You don't really want to get your money's worth out
insurance,
of insurance. That's right. But unfortunately, if we live long enough or have something else happen along the way, many of us may need some care. It may not be in a full-fledged nursing home, but it might be at home where we need some assistance with dressing or bathing. Maybe we have a stroke, or maybe we come down with dementia or some form of cognitive impairment. So we see that a lot with our elderly family members, and we see that could be our future at some point down the road as well. As much as we hate to face that, something we have to remember.
Yeah, well, I've heard people, and it's the kind of thing you bite your tongue, but they'll say, what if I buy this insurance and I don't need it?
That'd
as
be
if
great.
That's a bad thing. You
that
know?
Would be great.
But I'm kind of the poster boy for this. Mm-hmm. I got it years ago. I got it much younger than most people recommend, but the Washington Post offered a group plan. I bought it. They didn't have inflation protection then, but I bought a good rate and whatnot. Mm-hmm. The company has since dropped it.
Wow. Yeah.
Now, I'm still covered, right. And my cohort at the Washington Post, retirees mostly now, they're still covered, but they don't offer it anymore. Mm-hmm. And I looked up, and at the time that I bought long-term care insurance, there were something like 24, 26 companies that offered it. Now,
like
20 years later, literally, I think there are fewer than six, and nobody offers it. And that it tells you the experience rated situation to this. It is very expensive. People are living longer. Mm-hmm. That medicine is prolonging people's lives, but the quality not necessarily is been improved. But it is the thing, as you said, unfortunately, many of us will need it.
Right. Yeah. What you said is key, that you bought it and now nobody else can get into that plan.
That's right.
And I think we need to look at that and say, at least get something. And I say this a lot in class, you know, something is always better than nothing. So even if you get maybe not enough to cover the full cost of care, but maybe 2 or 3 years of coverage for $150 or $200 a day, at least that's going to give your family some relief of that crisis, because it's going to be a crisis when the time comes to use it. So you want to make sure that they have some place to go to help relieve the burden of that type of caregiving.
Right. Now, back to FEGLI, the Federal Employee Group Life Insurance Plan, some premiums going up, some going down. This is one of those things where it does pay to shop around, because if you're young, healthy, a marathoner, you know, super good heart rate, all that, you could probably get a better plan on the outside as an individual.
Right.
But it is, as we say, it's a group plan. So if you're not young, if you're not healthy, the government plan is a very good deal indeed, because you might be literally uninsurable outside of that.
Yeah. Yeah, the FEGLI, that's another place where we're all of a sudden this change came out of the blue with FEGLI.
Yeah.
The first part of the change is starting on January 1st, the premiums are going to change. So if you're covered under the basic FEGLI, that premium is staying the same for basic for employees. But the optional coverage is option A, which is the standard option that we've had for the last 50 years. Those premiums up until you turn 60 are actually going down just a little bit. So you'll save some money on option A. On option B, and that's the big one, that's the one where people elect multiples of their salary, and you can have five times your salary. I had a guy in class yesterday with $750,000 worth of option B, and you pay for that biweekly per thousand, so 750 times the per thousand rate. Those premiums also are going down until you hit age 80. So if you still want to carry option B at age 80, that premium is going up 24 cents per thousand. But every other premium younger than age 80 is either staying the same or it's going down. And people say, well, how could the life insurance rates be going down? Doesn't everything go up? Well, when people live longer, that helps reduce the cost,
right away. Yeah.
Especially when people aren't dying at the younger ages. We're finding ways to prolong cancer patients. We're finding a lot of cures for, thankfully, for certain illnesses. So that helps the insurance rate stay reasonable. And then with option C, which is your family coverage, you can cover your spouse and your dependent children. Those rates, again, for the younger ages are going down. The older ages, starting at age 70, are going up. So watch for that in January. Your agencies will be notifying you of those rate changes. You'll get the chart, and you'll see that on OPM's website as well. But another thing to say about FEGLI is that although, and it's true that many employees could shop around and save significant money on FEGLI rates compared to, comparing it out to outside term life insurance. However, a couple of things to keep in mind. Number one, Fegley, like you said, covers everybody in the government. There's going to be an open season next year, not this September, but a year from September. So employees who aren't insurable can get into Fegley next year. When you sign up in September of 2016, the coverage won't take effect for a year. So we're looking
stay alive.
At 2017, but at least you'll get it. So if you're someone in your 30s or 40s who might have been maybe diagnosed with MS or who knows, something that make you uninsurable on the private market, this
good
is
point,
your chance.
Yeah.
You know, you don't have to have a life event. You don't have to get married. You just have to wait for the open season.
Well, you know, another thing I was going to ask you is the theory behind life insurance. I mean, why do you have life insurance? And this is a rhetorical question, but if you're 80, why do you have life insurance? You presumably don't have young kids. You probably, if you have a mortgage, it's paid off or close to it. And these are the basic reasons, I assume, that you get life insurance to begin with, to take care of a spouse who's left behind with to take care of kids and or to pay off a mortgage.
Yeah.
But as you get older, I think some people automatically have it, but they're not quite, they've forgotten why they have it.
Yeah, we find that with Fegley a lot because every 5 years, as the premiums go up, they don't ask you, do you want to continue it or, you know, what do you want to do with this or reevaluate it? It just goes up and you see it come out of your paycheck. And if you're not really paying close attention, it's just one of those things that's withheld as long as you work for the government. You don't really have too many opportunities to make changes or be aware of those changes. There are some people who use life insurance for legacy planning and they want to leave it to, you know, whoever charity or whatever. But that's not the norm. Like you said, the most popular reason to carry life insurance is, what if I go first? Who's going to raise these kids? Who's going to pay for the house? Who's going to help my spouse maintain their lifestyle? And that's generally a need we have when we're younger, as opposed to as we get older and the house is paid off, the kids are grown. I might be now widowed or divorced. So I don't need the life insurance that I needed 20 years ago. So I always tell employees, reevaluate your coverage, shop around. Now, remember that Fegley will float with your salary. It's another plus of Fegley. So every time you get a pay raise, the amount of insurance goes up. You don't have to pass a physical, so it keeps increasing as your pay goes up. So some people like that feature of Fegley, that as your salary increases, your life insurance can double or triple over your career. So that's something else to remember. And one last thing about Fegley that nobody thinks about is that Fegley will pay no matter what. No matter how you die, Fegley will pay. There's only one exception. There's one reason that Fegley will not pay your beneficiary. And I'll bet you even you don't know what it is.
Skydiving.
No.
Okay.
It is if your beneficiary intentionally caused your death.
Oh, okay.
Not accidentally,
yeah,
but,
okay.
But if your beneficiary murdered you, they won't pay. But other than that, suicide, act of war, terrorism, plane crash, skydiving, they'll pay no matter how
that's
you die.
That's interesting, yeah.
Which and some insurances won't.
And let your spouse know
that,
too.
Yes. Especially if they're your beneficiary.
Little added insurance, yeah, that's interesting. Lauren Larson, our producer, says we need to take a break. Be right back here on federalnewsradio.com. Welcome back to Your Turn. Mike Causey here. I'm talking with Tammy Flanagan. She is a benefits expert par excellence, writes a column for Government Executive Magazine, is associated with the National Institute of Transition Planning. Tammy, talking with you, talking with John Elliott, your sometimes colleague, and other people who conduct these seminars, you all have said from time to time, it's fascinating what people don't know, didn't think about it. And I've heard of people who at a seminar, and then maybe they've been in government 10 years, didn't realize there was sick leave.
I've seen people who didn't realize they had a retirement.
I know you've said that more than
that's
once.
More than once, yeah.
And I know one time a friend of mine was going to retire, or she was talking about her retirement from the government, and she had been told by her HR office that she couldn't, or she's going to have to pay back a tremendous amount of money in a lump sum. Mm-hmm. And I didn't know anything about it, but I said, I have a friend, John Elliott. Seems to me there may be something around. Anyhow, they huddled. He told her HR office was wrong.
Mm-hmm.
He was right.
Yeah.
They were wrong. She was elated. She wept. She was so happy because it meant A, she could retire sooner, and she
didn't have to pay all that money.
Didn't have to pay at all. It would be taken out in out of her annuity, I think.
Yeah, that's a sad commentary because the rules have become so complex. I mean, they were hard enough with just CSRS. Now we have two retirement systems. So the retirement specialist, unless they've been in that position for years and years and years, it's next to impossible to know all the rules. So you're better off to tell your employees, let me find out, rather than to give advice like that person got and send somebody down the wrong path.
Yeah,
that can be almost heart-stopping to find out something like that.
Yeah, I'd never seen it. And the other thing too, you for a long time, you had people in HR who were experienced, whatnot. They were under the old civil service retirement system, but some of the younger people they're counseling are under FERS, which is a totally different ballgame.
It's a different ballgame. Everything about it is a little bit different. You have to be sure you're giving the right information. And also, as employees, you have to be sure you're really asking the question clearly.
Mm-hmm.
Because there's that communication gap. We speak a different language. You know, if you say I'm talking about a deferred retirement, that's different from a postponed retirement.
Yeah.
So that, you know, you don't know that, but the agency is thinking you're talking about something different.
Yeah, this is a case people talk about bureaucracy and acronyms and whatnot, but this is a case where precision counts.
Yeah, be real clear. Talk like you're talking to someone who's never heard this before, because they probably haven't.
Okay. Dumb question, but when should people start planning for retirement?
The day they start working.
Okay. It's not so dumb, huh?
No, it's not so dumb. And what I'm finding, some agencies have got that and some agencies have not. And what I mean by that is some agencies are now offering, and this has nothing to do with, I want to retire fully at some point. I could care less if we have seminars or not. But I really think that having new employee seminars when you have an employee with 5 years or less service is a great idea. Have another one 5 years later, another one 5 years later. So throughout your career, as you change and your life changes and you're getting closer to retirement, you can keep adjusting those goals. It doesn't have to be a 3 or 5 day extravaganza, but a half a day or a lunchtime seminar. Mm-hmm. So educate your employees about these benefits.
I would think it would pay, if agencies really want to get the best young people and more importantly, keep them, I would think it would be really smart the first year to say, hey, look, you've got sick leave, you've got annual leave. This is what your thrift savings plan could look like in 20 years. You're getting that 5% tax-deferred pay raise in the form of a matching contribution.
Yeah, before you think about leaving, look at what you're going to give up.
Yeah, lock them in.
Look at what you're going to give up.
I was going to ask you about a variety of, a sort of a cocktail of things that people should be looking at before they retire.
Yeah, so besides just saving for retirement and understanding your service credit issues, also understand how insurance works and how insurance carries into retirement. And also realize, I think, that your insurance needs, whether it's life insurance, long-term care, health insurance, those needs are going to change as you and your family change. You know, you might start out single and in perfect health. You might end up with 3 or 4 kids, or you might end up with an illness or a disease that needs different treatment. So really keep aware that you have this broad array of wonderful benefits, but yet we stay so focused on just this one thing that we've had over and over again. So don't be afraid of change. You know, don't be afraid to try something new. I always tell people, if you want to switch your health plan and you hate it, next year there's another open season. You can switch back to what you had before, but you won't know until you try.
And
nothing
you have
venture,
so many
nothing
choices,
gained.
Too, in the
health
plan. Phased retirement. Boy, they are really taking their time phasing in phased retirement. Yeah. Anything on that? Anything about
it? Not too much movement. In fact, I've heard less now than I've heard since the whole thing happened. And I think it's not uncommon because even in the private sector, and I think this whole phased retirement for federal employees was patterned after a corporate idea of phased retirement, which in theory, to me, that's what I'm doing. And I think it's the greatest thing in the world that you just kind of ease into full retirement. For some people, they don't want to go cold turkey. And so this idea of phased retirement is a wonderful thing for federal employees. And a lot of them know that and they want it. The agencies are still trying to figure out what's in it for them. There's a mentoring component to it. So the agencies know that the employees who go into phased retirement will have to, and they're required to, spend 20% of their time mentoring. But they got to define what that is. They got to figure out how long would it be wise to keep somebody in phased retirement. They have to set a limit to it, perhaps. So the agencies hopefully are studying this and trying to figure out how it's going to work for them. So I think it's going to take one of the big DOD mm-hmm. or HHS or somebody, DHS, to come out with their rules. And then I think we'll start seeing it roll out in other agencies. So big one has done it yet.
Our producer, Lauren Larson, interviewed a top official at DOD the other day, and it was on her show. Mm-hmm. And they mentioned that they were getting close to it.
Oh,
but
good.
We still don't know what it's. And as you said, it will probably come out of the Pentagon.
Yeah.
But there's certain parameters. Now, they have to spend 20% of their time mentoring. Mm-hmm. Of course, the definition of mentoring has got to be redefined.
Yep.
Yeah. Are there any other time limits? Is it
Yeah,
is
the
it
law
forever?
Didn't set a time limit.
Okay.
So if the agency doesn't set a time limit, you could have somebody phasing into retirement for 25 years, mm-hmm. which is probably not what the agency wants.
Right.
So they're going to have to probably set some type of a limit. They're going to have to decide, what if in one particular office you got 6 employees who want to phase into retirement?
Yeah.
You can't maybe afford that. So how will you determine, you know, who gets to go and who doesn't?
So in an 80-hour pay period, the phased retiree would work, what, 40?
Yep, okay. It's going to be 50-50.
And again, they have to decide how to break that down. Is mm-hmm. it Monday,
yeah,
Wednesday,
it?
Friday?
Exactly.
Is it half days? Yeah.
Yeah, a lot of people would like to work 6 months and be off 6 months, but that's not how it's going to work.
Okay. Tammy, thank you very much.
You're welcome, Mike. Thanks.
Very interesting show. Hope people will tell friends about it. We're archived on our homepage. They can listen anytime, and we'll have you back. Thank you, Tammy Flanagan. Have a good week, if you're